Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Getting Stuff Done in Higher Education. I am one of the co-hosts, Kevin, and joined always by Fritz and Kelvin. And today we have the great opportunity to meet with Nick Pace, who is currently the Dean of Education at the University of Kentucky. Welcome, Nick. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Happy to be invited, and really appreciate the invitation. Glad to be with you.
Great. So we're pretty loose and relaxed in this environment. This is really an opportunity for you to kind of really just tell some stories of things that you want to talk about. But I was sharing with everybody else because I just think it's fascinating. It's not fascinating. It's who you are. But you're what, 6'6"? 6'10".
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I am. Yeah. People, when I meet people outside of the Zoom screen, they will often say, geez, I didn't realize you were so tall. And I said, well, the rectangle doesn't capture that.
Yeah, it's like you walk down the hallway with Nick, and I'm 5'11". I'll call myself 6 foot. But you're like this. Fire is looking up like,
well, so. Yeah, people don't always anticipate that the tall man from the circus is coming to the meeting.
Do you still get approached by, NBA or Major League Baseball scouts? Like, can you just give me like 3 pitches over an 8th inning?
No, exactly 0 scouts. But especially here in, UK basketball country, it is a very common question. Not did you play, but where?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I bet.
That is a common question. I did attend undergrad at the University of Northern Iowa on a basketball scholarship and had a terrific experience. So I do have that background, and that is a really wonderful, fun part of being here at the University of Kentucky because it's such a blue blood basketball environment.
Did you have any inklings of wanting to go beyond college ball?
So I tore the ligaments in my right ankle on January 21st of my senior year, and that sort of made that part of the season a little bit more difficult, because I didn't have kind of the finish to the college career that maybe would help that along. I did have a tryout in the August after I graduated with a professional team in Finland. And so I tell people I was a pro for like 8 days. Went over, had the tryout. I wasn't in great shape because at that point I thought I was going to grad school, and I, had kind of pivoted and changed plans. And then my college team actually was on a Scandinavian tour, and my college coach, Eldon Miller, a fabulous human being and great mentor and just a terrific man, called and said, hey, we're in this city in Finland, and they're looking for a post player. You need to get over here. And so I did, and they took a better player, and I got 8 days in Helsinki and Lahti, Finland. It was a very brief on the edge of true professional career.
Well, did you at least qualify for the pension? Just kidding.
No, boy, that is the thing. Boy, make that, get the league minimum and qualify for the pension, and then go do what you want to do. If my teammates were on the call, or listen or tuning in, they would say, okay, let's be real. You were not going to be a pro anywhere at any point, but they're not here and I am. So
you're a pro in our minds, Nick. So
there you go.
So you've recently transitioned to University of Kentucky, currently Dean of Education. So how's it going?
It's been a really good transition. I started on July 1st, And my last official day at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln was June 12th. So we had a couple of weeks in there to sort of unpack and explore a little bit and get our wits about us. It's been really good. People have been generous and patient and kind and forgiving and all of the things that are helpful, you know, when you're a new person, kind of starting at the, you know, the bottom of that Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, just the basic stuff. Where do I park and who does this and how do you get an outside phone line? And, you know, those
coffee, where's the coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's been great. This is a terrific, college, a very proud college. The University of Kentucky really leans hard into serving the Commonwealth. And President Capiluto and others talk about how does this institution help Kentuckians be healthier, wealthier, and wiser? And how does this institution advance Kentucky together? And so even just, you know, in my 93 days or so here, I see lots of examples of that. And focus or, you know, that purpose was a big draw here for me. I'm really, you know, really excited about that part of the role. And I really believe that much of the future of public higher ed depends on how well we support folks in the Commonwealth and how well we take the research and scholarship and creative activity that happens here at a really terrifically high level all the time. And how do we put that in the hands of somebody in Paducah or, you know, Georgetown or wherever on a Thursday afternoon so they can do something with it. And, you know, whether that's a teacher or, you know, coaches or exercise scientists, people, folks working in the front office of an athletic team or a YMCA or a community health organization. We've really got to bridge that theory to practice connection.
Which, I mean, what you're saying is, you know, you're at a land grant institution. So am I. Actually, I think we all are effectively. That is the mission of land grant institutions. You know, where I work at the University of Minnesota, Nick, I work in Morrill Hall, which is where the provost's office, the president's office is. And every day I walk in, depending on which door I go in, there's a copy of the Morrill Act on the wall. And then sometimes I stop and read it because not the whole thing, but, you know, I read through it because I'm like, oh, yeah, what does it say in a time when people are the value of higher ed is in flux and in question? Excuse me, someone's calling me. It's good to reflect on that. Why are we here? And it back then, 1862, it says the same thing. We're here for the states in which we are situated to do practical things like agriculture and science and to educate people. Yeah, but those very practical, pragmatic things. So I think you're spot on, is that focusing on pragmatic activities that help the Commonwealth, help the state, help the region, is a very prudent path to showing value to the communities and the places in which we are situated.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that focus really helps us counter some of those questions about, well, what is the purpose of higher ed? What's the actual value, you know, of a college education? One of the things that attracted me to the position here at the University of Kentucky was the number of times in the position description that I read things like holistic, for, with, and through. And I actually, when I made it to the campus interview stage, I took the position description and I put it in a word cloud because I wanted to like confirm that they weren't just words that were jumping out at me because that's what I wanted to read or that's what I, you know, my eye was drawn to. But the cloud, you know, sort of bared that out. It showed that, yeah, I wasn't just making it up. I mean, horses was in there a couple times and bourbon was in there a couple times.
Oh, there you go.
But the big words, for, with, and through, students, community, those really jumped.
So, Nick, when you think about the role of higher ed and just some of the things you talked about, right, like getting people into their community to have a better sense of where they are and where they're going to go, and you think about where you've come from as working in K-12 and now working in higher ed and all that, how do you help students kind of, especially in education, people who want to be teachers, like my daughter, third grade teacher, doesn't get paid very well, but it's a passion and it's something that they really want to do. How do you help students kind of still get past like the fact that you're not going to be a millionaire being a K-12 teacher unless you're doing something outside the classroom?
Yeah.
Right. How do you keep that passion in a curriculum, especially with all the noise of the value of higher ed, the cost of higher ed, the return on investment in higher ed? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's, you know, it's probably a more important question than it ever has been before because of the things that you said, Kevin. One of the things that I have seen over and over now at the three institutions where I've served after being a teacher and a principal is that for a whole lot of the aspiring teachers that I work with, they're really going in with their eyes wide open, and a whole lot of them wouldn't do anything else. It's like, you know, mission, calling, purpose stuff for them. And we can help through things like, you know, significant investment in scholarship dollars or tuition remission or loan forgiveness and some of those things. And the University of Nebraska Lincoln College of Education and Human Sciences has a really terrific program, Kevin, that you're familiar with, called Teacher Scholars Academy. And it provides future teachers with a pretty significant stipend. And then they are selected and admitted in a cohort. And there's a program coordinator that kind of serves as the home base for these students. So they move through as a group, and they are exposed to, you know, kind of some other professional learning opportunities. And one of the students that was in that program, his name is Paul Pekish. He was going to come to UNL and maybe study engineering, maybe study business, wasn't sure, had filled out the application for the Teacher Scholars Academy kind of on a whim, because there are educators in every direction in his family. And then he got a call from the program coordinator setting up the Zoom interview for that program. And he learned what the stipend was, and he learned what the cohort was going to feel like. And it almost gave Paul license to say, actually, you know what? I probably most want to be a teacher. And now this allows me to say yes to being a teacher. That makes it easier to explain to people my choice, because I'm a part of something big. I'm a part of something that's, you know, being invested in, et cetera. And Paul wound up, you know, being the student body president at the University of Nebraska Lincoln, and is teaching in suburban Omaha now. And, you know, probably there's law school in his future and a bunch of things. But I think the students with the heart for the work as teachers are out there. We have to eliminate obstacles financially. We have to do a much better job of honoring the profession. I talk a lot about this every rancher in Nebraska, every horse farm owner, breeder, trainer in Kentucky, every astronaut, United States senator, small business owner, entrepreneur, venture capitalist, attorney, has had a teacher who was transformational in their life and in their trajectory. And they just about always can give you that person's name.
Yeah.
And so we try to talk a lot about you're choosing a life and you are choosing to step into that space where people that you've not met yet are going to look back and say, wow, and Mrs. Jackson, I would not be an engineer without Mrs. Jackson. I would not be a parent had Mrs. Jackson not kept me in school. I would not have gotten serious about my studies had Coach Rogers not said, all right, listen, I know you're coming here because of sports, but that's going to end. So let's tune in, you know, and most of the students, aspiring teachers that I talk to are trying to emulate or live up to, you know, some of those people. And for a lot of them, they wouldn't do anything else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before you came in, Kevin and Kelvin and I were talking a bit about your path, but I'm interested in what took you from the K-12 space towards leaping into higher ed, and not just in the faculty world, but really ascending up into leadership, because that's not uncommon, but I think it is unique enough that it's worth talking about.
Yeah. I never wanted to be a principal. Never thought about being a principal. And I was a first year teacher. I was a pretty new teacher. And observed, you know, some principals around me. I thought, gosh, I think I may probably do that. And when I became a principal, I wasn't very well prepared. And I found that many of the things in the job that I was required to do, if I was good at those things, or if I could hold those things down, it didn't necessarily come from a master's degree, which is not a criticism of the institution. It's a statement about the quality of programs everywhere at that point, you know, at that point in higher ed. And so I jumped from being a principal to a faculty position at the master's level, supervising and placing student teachers back at the University of Northern Iowa, my alma mater. And there were a couple of things that were the draw. One was I love and loved the institution, and the chance to, you know, give something back to a place that had been really important to us was really appealing. The other thing was that support of student teachers from early childhood to industrial tech and everything in between in that final semester before they go out and get jobs represented a whole lot of what I found very difficult to get into as principal. Because as principal, I was always consumed with management stuff, you know, just the daily whack-a-mole, you know, whether it's, you know, student conduct or, you know, we've got a toilet overflowing on the second floor, the ovens don't work, and there's 400 students waiting for lunch, and there's a parent in the office to sit. You just that constant kind of firefighting of administrative stuff. The job that I had working with those student teachers was to place them, to supervise them, give them really actionable feedback and ask really good questions. It was instructional leadership.
Yeah.
Which is what we're trying to, you know, equip principals to do now. And it's that stuff that I had such a hard time getting to. And so I got to teach the human relations course that they took along with student teaching. And then I got to teach the seminar in student teaching, which was, you know, bringing them together and saying, okay, how'd it go today? And, you know, one student said, "Whoa, we should have seen what happened in my classroom today." It was a terrific job, and one that I really loved. As much as I loved it, I always thought that I would like to contribute something to helping principals be better prepared than I had been. Mm-hmm. And so after 5 years of the student teaching role, I had earned my doctorate and moved into a different department that was focused on working with school leaders. And that was, you know, that was, you know, principals are my people. That was very special and something that I've really, really enjoyed doing. Like being a principal, I never thought about being a department chair or a dean. Never really considered it. And, you know, had a few people over different times mention that, you know, those higher ed leadership opportunities to me way before I ever thought of them. And I've always had this other thing that, you know, I've seen some people in higher ed that I felt were really careerist and were most focused on the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
At times I have observed people that in my judgment, fairly or unfairly, I didn't think were all in where we were at that moment. And so I think that might be some of the reason that I've never, like, you know, said, I want to be this, or I want this job, or in 5 years, I want to be at this place doing that thing. I've never approached it that way. I've wanted to do good work with fun people who are very passionate and care deeply, and have wanted it to matter and have some fun in the process. And I have been amazingly fortunate to have been in spaces that I've been able to do that, and just super grateful for how those things have fallen together.
That really resonates. Actually, I'm going to say this blanket statement. That resonates with the three of us, because we've talked about this kind of thing before. But, you know, one of the tough, I guess it is a reality, I'm not going to say a tough aspect, but to move into higher roles in higher ed, you often have to leave an institution. That,
yeah,
general promotion isn't always, especially when you start getting higher up, it doesn't always happen, which is irksome to me because, you know, yes, outside perspectives are great. But there's so much benefit to someone with institutional knowledge and blending that with people who have other perspectives with from outside or different parts of an institution.
Yeah.
That I think a lot is lost by just, especially if it's a leadership role, like, yeah, we need the outside person. We need outside people. Cause then you got to spend all that time, they got to acculturate, or they frankly can be disruptive to the culture that might've already been moving along really well. So I applaud your perspective on that, because I have a sneaking suspicion that you're going to create a culture like that, where people will get upward opportunities, and they'll, you know, you will create that. You're at the top of your college now.
I hope so. And to your point, I've been an internal candidate for some leadership positions a couple handful of times, and was not the chosen candidate, and that is fine. And, you know, I'm not the most competitive person in the world, but I like to win, right? I like to be chosen. We like to be, you know, you like to grab those things, excuse me. But, you know, I've also been around it enough to know that, or believe that, you know, I think things shake out generally in the ways they're supposed to, or that you need them to. I've wanted some jobs that I was not offered, and I wanted some of them badly, and it hurt when I didn't get them. And I can see now I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah.
That wasn't the answer. I'd have said yes, and it probably would have been somewhere between pretty good and fine. Hopefully not bad match. But, you know, I can see now that, yeah, that wasn't the answer. And as a teacher, I was looking at a move from one teaching position to another teaching position. And I had some colleagues at school number one that, to my surprise and real significant disappointment, were not enthusiastic about me going to that other school. And that really took me aback because I thought we were like tight. I thought we had a really strong relationship, and the relationship was rooted in like lifting up and doing stuff. And I've found that what some of them wanted was for me to stay right there because that's what they wanted.
Oh yeah.
And I have carried that. And, you know, when I have people that I work with now that are looking at the next thing professionally, I do try really hard to say, all right, I hope that what you want, and I hope the best thing for you is being right here with us right now doing this work. And I'm going to try to make that happen. And if that isn't the thing, then I need to respect and admire and appreciate you enough and have enough of a cohesive, authentic relationship that if it's not here, then my job becomes, all right, how do I help you make the next thing happen? Because to approach it the first way, for me, is just too focused on me. If that makes any sense, and I respect people that, you know, see it differently, and who might say, if I'm the leader and I can keep you here, I'm going to fight like hell to keep you here and do everything I can. And I'll talk retention, I'll talk descriptions, I'll talk what would it look like. But if and when you say to me to grow and to evolve and develop, I maybe need to do the hard thing or the less convenient thing, and it involves going somewhere else as a colleague and as a friend, hopefully, and as a person that's interested in helping people rise and grow and develop, I think at that point my job becomes, all right, if it's not here, what is the next thing for you, and how do I help with that?
I respect you immensely for that.
My first instinct is just to put my head down and work. Just put my head down and focus on what's right in front of me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little too much. Sometimes I can do that at the expense of national organizations and, you know, connectivity with other things, but I often feel like I had so much right here. And I just got to keep focusing on it. And sometimes that over-focus on what's right here can cause us to, you know, have tunnel vision and not see possibilities or not see, gosh, this is awesome and this is terrific work and I love these people and the impact that we're having. And I got to have a broad enough view to understand that there may be other places, you know, and contributions where I can make. I had a principal mentor who was kind of a John Wayne style, you know, kind of, I call him a 51-49 guy, you know, 51 love him, 49 can't stand. It was very hourly, you know.
I believe the new word is frenemy.
Yeah. And I remember Doc Smith saying one time, never stay for the people. And I thought, man,
wow,
you are a cold dude and transactional and a bunch of other things. But I've come to learn that or understand that what he meant was many times the amazing people that we are so tied to and so, and that we admire so much and that teach us so much and that are making such, you know, amazing differences, they're at the next place too. You just don't know them yet.
Right.
And I don't want that to land like, oh yeah, we're friends while I'm here. And then when you go to the next place, you know, just cast off and transactional and on to the next thing. But I do think that Daryl was on to something, at least in my mind, because the people that I have learned from and been coached by and taught by, that I would not have planned for myself, has just been unbelievable. And I think it's important to be open to that.
Yeah, you know, especially in higher ed, when you work with faculty a lot, which I know Kevin and Kelvin and I have in different parts of, I mean, been faculty, especially Kelvin back in other times. When you work with faculty a lot, they are often rooted in those places for much or most of their careers. There's motion, and you know, now is a time of motion for a lot of faculty. But I think on the staff side, there's that can, I'm not going to say hold you back, but being around them, you know, I want to be rooted in a way, not for my whole life, but I want to be part of a culture when I'm working in an organization. So I think working with faculty, you have to be careful when you're on the staff side to not see an equivalence with your role. Like, oh, I should stay here my whole career because of XYZ, because it's the faculty culture is often that. So it's a balancing act, because I worked at McAllister College for 9 years and had the best experience because I worked so closely with faculty in the humanities and all over the institution. You know, my office was in their building in the humanities building. It was great because they were so great and welcoming, but I also felt like I need to not, I'm not in that world too, where I, you know, there's no tenured path. There's no promotion to full professor. I need to also pay attention to what my career needs. And that's one of the things that compelled me to find a route beyond McAllister, as much as I actually, there's days I miss it, you know, like strolling on campus, meeting those folks. And
I'm right there with you. My wife and I, between us, have 3 degrees from the University of Northern Iowa. I was a department chair in a newly renovated building that had a bank of windows that looked across the street at the basketball arena where we played. And it was probably as much home as any place, you know, since growing up. And as much as I love the institution and the people and all of the things that they invested in me, I could not have learned the things that I learned without accepting the invitation to go to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And I cried violently when I shared the decision, because I knew that I needed to, but I didn't know if I could physically pull it off, and it had to happen. And that is said with no judgment for people who arrive at a different decision and say, nope, this is my place and I'm right here and this is my lane and this is it.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of it's valid points, right? Like, we have to think about who we are and where our journey is going to go, just as much as we think about our students and what's our student journey going to be and how are we going to help our students get to where they want to be. I think, you know, it's really thinking about how not everybody has to stay and not everybody has to be, this is the only place I ever work. And if it is, it's fine, right? Like that's a choice.
Yeah.
But also I think really what you're saying is you're willing to be that stepping stone for someone. If you need a hand to get to here, or you want to stay here, but you want to do something differently, what can I do? Those are paths, and those are paths that you can help them work through to kind of get to what's going to make them feel better. I think, you know, it's a different story than the disgruntled employee. That's just like, I've got to get out of this place. This is terrible. This is not for me. This is not what I thought I was going to get into. It's the other path. It's the path of how do you help someone grow in who they want to be as an individual?
That, Kevin, that's actually better than I said it by quite a bit. That's what I meant.
I got it. You know,
I did get it. I was just like putting my own spin on the way I think about it. So, Nick, we have just a few more minutes left, and you tell me whether or not you want to talk about this. But I love your Buckeye story.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you have Buckeyes in the office somewhere.
I do. So right there.
Yep, there they are. Yeah,
it's a big
the jar of Buckeyes.
Yeah. Can you share your connection to Buckeyes?
Yeah. So my grandfather on my mom's side was a tough old German Iowa farmer you know, who could grow corn on a patch of concrete or sand, probably, you know, just a quintessential, you know, Iowa farmer, direct, very entertaining language, great sense of humor, you know, all of the things, not formally educated. I mean, went to high school, you know, and he carried a Buckeye in his pocket his whole life because he believed that the Buckeye brought good luck. And I have since learned that that is a folklore, a folk wisdom thing in a lot of parts of the country. And it's an indigenous belief in among some indigenous peoples also. And so my wife and our kids got into, you know, finding Buckeye trees and collecting Buckeyes many, many years ago. And I was actually at Nebraska, and a staff member was in my office, because sometimes people will see the bowl and they'll say, oh, what a bunch of acorns, or where'd you get all the chestnuts or something. But this guy saw the bowl of Buckeyes, and I started in the story. So yeah, my grandfather, you know, carried a Buckeye. He reaches in his pocket and pulls out a Buckeye and said, yes, my grandfather believed the same thing.
Oh, wow.
And I do qualify it by saying, you know, my grandfather never traveled east of the Mississippi River except for a government-sponsored business trip to France in 1943. So it's not an Ohio State Buckeye, or that's not the reference. So I have a giant bowl of Buckeyes, and I give them to students on graduation day or job interview day or dissertation defense day. At our opening advanced meeting here in the college this fall, I had some Buckeyes out on the table for people that, you know, wanted to grab one and stick it in their purse or their backpack or their, you know, just kind of a good luck thing, a story. I think it's important to have a sense of, you know, history and people that have come before us. And, you know, my father, my grandfather didn't have any connection to higher ed. His daughters did not attend college. Good man, wanted good things for people. He'd have supported the school down on the corner, down the road. He'd have supported the bond issue because, you know, you plant a tree for the next guy, those things he would say. So the Buckeye has been a good kind of point of reference for me, as long as I explain it with clarity in Lincoln, so that the Big Ten connection to our friends in Columbus doesn't get too dicey, and explain it to folks here in Lexington, so they know that it's not the Ohio State University reference, but
it's lighter than carrying around a box of horseshoes.
Yeah, you know, and the rabbit's foot. Yeah, I've got one in the backpack, one in the car. You know,
got them around. I've got one upstairs somewhere in my little box of cufflinks and stuff. Yeah, I need to dig it out now.
Yeah, the one you gave me is in my bag.
All right. Well, we've got an embarrassing number of Buckeyes in our stored away.
Well, I Kelvin and Kevin, I don't want to jump in too much, but what's next, but what are your plans? You're 90-ish days in, you know, you're 100 days almost. What's your plans, and where are you going to go with the University of Kentucky?
Well, this is a terrific college, really proud college, been very well supported and well led for a long time. And anytime a new leader comes in, you know, people say, well, what's your vision, or where are we headed? Where are you going to take us? And I have said that I don't think that vision is something that just comes with a new person and gets installed or plugged in or, you know, forced down. I think it's something that gets built together, or it should get built together. And I've told people here, that being said, in terms of vision, here are a couple of things that draw my eye. And one is, how do we situate this college in the disciplines that we have as the go-to destination of choice for students who want to learn about, be challenged and supported in the academic disciplines that we offer in the college? How do we situate it as, that's choice one. That's where you want to go. That's where I want to be. How do we situate the college as the go-to career destination of faculty members who want to do teaching and scholarly work related to those areas? Of all of the options available, boy, in this field, you better look at UK. How do we situate the college as the destination of choice for staff who want to contribute meaningfully to the success of those two groups in a true community that, you know, recognizes all different types of contributions? And you learn very quickly as a principal that nobody cares if you're out of the building, but if the cooks, custodians, secretary, support staff are gone, the wheels are going to come off very quickly. And then the fourth thing to that is, how do we situate the college as the go-to partner and co-creator of solutions to challenges that school districts are having and communities are having and sports teams, organizations, et cetera? Why are our eighth graders thriving and they are tanking as freshmen? What is going on? I bet UK can help us with that. How do we really do that well in the land grant context?
I mean, it sounds like extension in agriculture, really.
I think in a lot of ways the extension model and that connectivity works. The second, and we have our extended leadership team in the college, is doing a study. Yep. McClure's, the Carrying University, and we're really having some great conversations about how do you put some of those ideas in practice. And it's not just, you know, sit around and, you know, sing campfire songs and we all enjoy each other so much that we want to go to dinner every week, because that's not realistic. But how do we, you know, create that kind of destination environment? And then the second thing that draws my eye that I've talked a lot about here is, how do we really excel at, you know, connecting theory to practice, and that take the amazing work that gets done, funded research, unfunded research, creative activity, and come alongside communities and schools and organizations and, you know, co-create, you know, solutions that they need. It's very different than, you know, coming into town and saying, I'm from the university and I'm here to fix you. I'm here to boss you around. I'm here to discount your experience. I'm here to talk down to you. Or, you know, I think sometimes folks have experienced that from higher ed, and I'm drawn to a much more co-creation, authentic collaboration. What do you need? How can we help?
I think that's one of the best questions you can ever ask in maybe in any setting, but in higher education, especially, you know, leadership or staff roles, how can I help? Yeah. And so I appreciate that you put that in there. I also appreciate what you said about, well, effectively what you said from my, where I sit, is disruption is not necessarily innovation.
Yeah.
To come into an organization as a new leader and to just throw everything out as a matter of course, I don't, that seems to be a common refrain in the current professional, you know, in the private sector, business, et cetera. And it gets pushed all over the place. And I don't necessarily see it as valid in every setting as just, you know, it's an automatic setting. So I really appreciate you said you're going to come in and listen. And honestly, the fact that you, I'm assuming you evoked these things and said them in your interviewing processes, I'm sure there are lots of rounds to say that, and that they're like, yeah, this is what we want. We don't necessarily need someone to come and trash the house here. We need someone to come in and listen and make really smart, informed decisions about where this college needs to go, can go, and then the kind of impact doing that can have.
Yeah, yeah. I did talk about that a lot. And I coach students all the time that when you are going to that interview, you got to answer the questions truthfully and honestly. And we all do our homework and we learn as much as we can on the front end. But don't tell them what you think they want to hear, because you don't know what they want to hear. You have to answer it like authentically. If this resonates and if this might be a fit, then let's keep the conversation going. And if it's not, you know, it's the old Bowman and Deal stuff about when the fit is bad, the organization or the individual or both are going to suffer. And so you better be authentic about what they better be authentic about what are the needs and aspirations and what's the mission.
Yep.
And then you better be authentic about, all right, here's what I see, here's what I bring, here's what you would be getting. Because, you know, if somebody wants the great collaborator, but the person coming in is assuming that they're walking in on the new sheriff plan, that's not gonna go well.
I laughed because you said Bowman and Deal. I had a quick shudder from graduate school. Formal orgs.
Yeah. Back.
Now I'm going to have my quarterly nightmare where I forgot to go to a class and I haven't done any of the work. Oh, I'm just kidding.
Gotcha. So yeah, those are front of mind here. And again, this college and this institution does so very many things well and has for a long time. I think there's despite all the churn of public higher ed right now and you know, the tone and tenor in the country, et cetera, there's some exciting, fun, alluring things happening here that are really, really appealing and I hope we can talk again down the road and have some tangible ways that we're moving the needle.
Yeah. So outside of work, Nick, what are some fun things that you and your wife have done since you've gotten to Kentucky?
You know, we have really had a good time just exploring the Commonwealth. We've been Iowa, Midwest, Iowa, Nebraska, pretty much our whole whole lives, really. And so getting out in Kentucky has been really fun. We've been to several distillery, the bourbon tasting tours, and just the history and the science behind, you know, the recipes.
Yeah.
That's been super fun. Learning more about the history of the Commonwealth, and, you know, you get to this longitude in the USA, and, you know, the structures, many of them are 100 years older than they are, you know, in Iowa and Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And so that history has been interesting. You know, Kentucky's history as a slave state that stayed in the Union.
Yep.
And the divisions there and the pockets, as a former social studies teacher, that is super interesting to me. At one of the interviews, I was in an Uber and I asked the driver, what are the most important things, you know, that I would need to know if I were to be here. And he said, there's three. He said, UK basketball, horses, and bourbon. And I said, well, I'm pretty good shape on the basketball as a basketball guy. I don't know anything about horses and I'm happy to learn about bourbon. So tomorrow, I'm going to the Keeneland racetrack, which is the big horse track here in Lexington. It'll be a little different Saturday because I'll get up and put on a suit and a bow tie and probably a hat and go watch the race and take in that horse culture. So that has been super fun. People have been really welcoming. Lexington's a great food town. We're having a lot of fun and also adjusting to the fact that our family's a little more spread out than it's been.
Are you saying y'all yet?
I say y'all a bit, but I've also said y'all previously.
Right.
I will say, Kevin, that we had somebody at the house, and he was complaining about Lexington traffic, which is a thing. And he said, I've plumb sat there an hour. I've not heard somebody use plumb as an adverb before. And so that was super exciting as a student of culture and, you know, language. Let's see. The other one, fixin'.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I gave my extension ladder away, and the fella said he was fixing to be there about 4:30 to pick it up. So that was good too.
Yeah, I don't say fixing much, but I'm definitely all y'all and all y'all.
Yeah. Y'alls, plural possessive, y'alls.
Y'alls. I'd heard finna. I'm finna be there about 4:00.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
But I'd not heard fixing to be there. So yeah, really enjoying the culture and learning our way through it. I've had a hot brown, which is a Kentucky sandwich that I think kinesiology and health promotion is a department in our college. And I think my colleagues in that department would say that I probably ought to have a hot brown once every 7 years or so. I'm watching that.
And I mean, being in a different latitude, literally, you'll get, I mean, fall in that region should be beautiful.
Yeah. It's been pretty warm here for the last couple of weeks, you know, 80s, but the humidity's down. You know, people are saying, oh no, you're going to want that snowblower once a year. And I've said, trust me, I've spent a lot of time in Cedar Falls, Iowa, and Lincoln, Nebraska, and the snowblower stayed in Lincoln.
Yeah.
I got a broom. I'll be good.
I don't think you're going to need a broom.
Yes.
They're going to shut down if it snows that much. You need a snowblower anyway. That's what I understand. Nothing's going to happen. It's like my first year when I went to Fayetteville, Arkansas. I was like, snowed. It's like, oh, we're not even going to school. It's like, it's a dusting.
Yeah.
This is not snow. But.
Yeah. We call that Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Said the Minnesota guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. So I've been here 20 years, but I've acclimated, you know. Actually, it's becoming more like St. Louis here. We're going to be in the mid-upper 80s today, which we're going to set a record, apparently, for October high and low. The low is going to be in the low 70s tonight. So it's like my roots are following me up here. So I'm all good.
Yeah. The end of, September to October was nothing like July, August. Like, we were really cool.
Yeah.
It was just wild.
We had a couple of weeks here that were like, upper 60s way early.
Well,
this has been fun.
It's been great. Appreciate you, Nick, being flexible and joining us today. Yeah. We really do appreciate you sharing your insights.
I appreciate the conversation. That's always, you know, fun to talk to other people that are, you know, passionate about higher ed and believe in what it is and believe in ways that it needs to do more and that we need it to do more. Really appreciate the invitation, and I'm gonna subscribe and give you all a listen.
Sounds good. There's a lot there to hear.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any better way to end it than that. So wish you all the best, and keep us informed as to how it's going as you further settle into your role.
Yeah, sure will. If I can help with things down the road, love to keep in touch, and appreciate it, and be well.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.